fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood here at Lambeau Field. Guys, Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Yes, jacket? Very nice.
Had to wear it at some point. And a lot of fireworks here at Lambeau today for the new year and for every touchdown that the Packers scored and their 41-17 win over the Minnesota Vikings, a game that was not even as close as that score indicates. Keeping their playoff hopes alive, they are now one game away from working their way in. They've gotten outside help from six different games, guys.
Anyone check what their playoff odds are now? I haven't seen
Yes, they're 60%.
They're 60%?
They are 60%.
Yeah. That's it? I guess a 6% chance of beating the Lions. Okay.
It used to be 2%.
It's just incredible. It's been an incredible month.
Come in today, beat the Vikings, as we said, 41-17, in what really was just a shellacking. A little bit of a caveat there. You know, the number one seed is still technically up for grabs in the NFC, and the Vikings, with the 49ers win on Sunday right now, are the number three seed. So there's still something to play for there, but they are a team that, for all intents and purposes, had their berth locked up. The Lions are going to be a very different team coming in here next week. But we'll get to that. That's a little bit of putting the cart before the horse. Let's focus on the Vikings right now. Guys, it all started, surprise, surprise, with Keyshawn Nixon. I'm going to take a victory lap. I won't run as quite as fast as Keyshawn Nixon did on that 105-yard touchdown return. He had to break one eventually. Knew it was coming.
No, he didn't have to.
He was pretty dang close.
Yeah,
he
the
got
way they're
tonight,
blocking, it sure seemed like
huge.
I was about to say, he got a lane that you could have fit a semi-truck through.
A kickoff return touchdown in the NFL is kind of like elite soccer clubs giving up a goal on a corner kick. It happens, but it's not supposed to happen. For it to happen, someone's got to screw up. And if you look at the hole that Keyshawn Nixon had, forget driving a Mack truck through. You could have driven 3-4 Mack trucks through that hole. So all power to him, and really all power to the blocking team on that kickoff coverage. The Vikings done screwed something up on that play.
Yeah, something got screwed up. But there were a couple of really nice blocks from DeGuara and Tyler Davis kind of caved in one side.
And Matt LaFleur talked about afterwards how that's sort of a mutually advantageous relationship, you know. Keyshawn Nixon is able to get that lane because of the blocks. Mm-hmm. The blocks are better because they know they have someone like Keyshawn Nixon back there. Those two things work hand in hand.
That's true. It really is true. It makes a difference when you know you got someone who can break it at any time.
I thought the most significant part of that play by far was the timing. For it to be emphatically right after that block punt in a must-win game, the stakes on this game. The Packers win, they control their fate in the playoffs. Win next week as well, they're in. If they lost, the loss would have eliminated them. They had to beat the Vikings. This is a must-win game. It's as close to a playoff game as you'll get outside the playoffs. And everyone, I think, is thinking of the block punt last year when you see another block punt this year. And the defensive stand for the field goal and then right after the field goal, the very next kickoff, to answer it that emphatically, turned the entire game.
You know, I asked Rasul Douglas after the game, was there a point in this game when you could look across the line at the Vikings and know it was over? And he said, as soon as we got that goal line stand, I knew it was over. And like you said, the fact that Nixon immediately scored, they were up at one point, the Packers were up 14-3 and had 14 total yards of offense. So they started with a kick return for a touchdown and a pick six from Darnell Savage, who spent weeks on the bench and then comes in today and gets his starting spot back, turns it into a pick six off of a tip from Rasul Douglas. That was one of three interceptions on the day. He had one, Adrian Amos had one, Rudy Ford. Just that kind of day for the defense, guys, and held Justin Jefferson to one catch on five targets for 15 yards. So let's start there. Jair Alexander did a lot of talking this week. He gave Justin Jefferson his props. Let's not let that get lost in the sauce. He definitely gave Justin Jefferson his props, but he talked a lot this week. He seemed to back it up today. Jair wasn't on Jefferson the entire game. They did, you know, let him get passed off. But I think the play that stands out to me was in the first quarter. They tried to hit sort of a deep shot. It wasn't an explosive necessarily, but a decent shot to Justin Jefferson down the right sideline. And Jair was just in sticky coverage. At that point, I think it was still 7-3. It may have been 14-3. It was early in the game. It was still in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. And Jair Alexander just is all over it, breaks it up. That would have put the Vikings right outside the red zone, knocking on it in what is still a very close game. And that ended up pushing them back into field goal range, and they missed it. So he wasn't on Jefferson the whole time. That play stands out, though, where he really kind of backed it up. What was your biggest takeaway? Ryan, I'll start with you because I know you talked about this with guys, with the way they handled Justin Jefferson tonight.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that Joe Barry learned from the past. And when they started the week and Joe Barry went about crafting how he was going to cover Justin Jefferson, he did what he should have done 4 months ago. He took Jair Alexander and Rasul Douglas aside and basically got out of their way. He trusted them, and he said, what do you guys want to do? Who wants to cover Justin Jefferson? Whatever you will come up with, I'm cool with. The opposite approach that he did week one, where he put training wheels on him, on two of his best players. He put training wheels on him and said, we're going to line up in zone, and Jair Alexander, you might be the highest paid cornerback in NFL history, but you're only going to get a handful of snaps against Justin Jefferson, which really, 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 really irked Jair Alexander. He was not pleased with it. Led to a meeting after that game so that he could vent with his defensive coordinator. Joe Barry did the opposite, and Jair Alexander immediately said, I'm covering 18. I've got Justin Jefferson. Rasul Douglas said, okay, get back to me at the end of the week. Sleep on it. Tell me when it's closer to kickoff. Just to make, you know, that was his response. And on Friday, Rasul Douglas is sitting in the cold tub. Jair comes up to him and says, I'm taking Justin Jefferson. And Rasul Douglas told me, I can tell what kind of Jair Alexander I'm getting based on the look in his eye. You know, I can read him. I know him. And you could tell he was serious. And so when he said, came up and said, I've got Justin Jefferson, Rasul Douglas told him, I already know that. That was his response. Like, okay. Yeah, and he said, I wasn't going to sit there and argue with him. I could tell he was serious. So Jair Alexander backed it up. You know, the comment that he made on Thursday about Justin Jefferson's week one outburst being a fluke. On Thursday, Jair Alexander knew that he would be shadowing Justin Jefferson, that he would be matching him for a lot of this game. Didn't care. He put that comment out there anyway. And then he went and backed it up, did the gritty after forcing that incompletion. If you're going to have that kind of swagger, you best be able to back it up, but he did.
Spoon, can you do the gritty?
Yeah, of course I can.
I'll give you $10 right now to do it.
My 8-year-old son can do the gritty. It's like his favorite thing in the world. He does it all the time. Walking down the sidewalk, he'll just bust it out. I'm like,
kids
okay.
I love it. I had to explain to our colleague Pete Doherty on our Facebook Live what the gritty was. Let's take another look at this, though, from a different point of view, too, Spoon. Jair backed it up. They never necessarily put him on an island with Jefferson, though.
No.
He had a lot of help.
Yeah.
Is that sort of what this defense needs to be?
Yeah, and I think what was the part to me that was impressive was they used just a huge variety of coverages against Jefferson. You know, they used man under. They used half quarters, half cover two. You know, one half of the field was cover two, the other half was quarters. They used, straight man a couple of times. The thing that was always interesting to me was who sometimes the other people who got matched up with Justin Jefferson.
Quay Walker.
Quay Walker, Preston Smith was matched up against him. There was the play to TJ Hockenson, the one that got picked off in Savage return. Mm-hmm. Devondre Campbell was on Jefferson, and it was a 4th-and-3, and to me that's like a pitch and catch between Cousins and Jefferson. And Campbell was all over him. And so he went to Hockenson down the middle, and that wound up being an interception.
The Rudy Ford interception?
No, the one that Savage returned.
Savage, yes. I'm sorry. Yes. I'm sorry.
So it was like really a team effort. And, you know, I think what Quay Walker kind of summed it up was he said, they just let us play. And I think that's kind of what happened. They they had all these change-ups and stuff, but somehow they bought into it. For some reason, they bought into it, and they executed it.
There were, as we said, three interceptions tonight and a forced fumble by Kenny Clark and fumble and recovery by Kenny Clark. A big play was always made when a big play needed to be made to kind of stop the Vikings.
Yeah.
We talked this past week with the secondary about what has made the difference with their turnovers. You know, in the first nine games, they had five interceptions. In the past seven games now, they are up to 12 interceptions. And during the week, when we talked to them about it, they said it's the pass rush. They're creating the opportunity for us. Think about it. T.J. Slayton had a tipped ball down on the goal to go. It didn't get picked off, but he had a tipped ball that fell incomplete. And then he's who tipped that ball that was supposed to go to Justin Jefferson that Adrian Amos returned to, wasn't it, Slayton?
Yes. Okay. Well, I don't know if they gave him credit for it. Yeah, I think they did, but it was tipped. Yep.
Yes.
Yep, Jefferson slipped and Amos got
right.
the interception.
And so I guess what we're seeing, like we've talked so much about complimentary football and we'll continue to do that across the board, but it was complimentary defense as well, and they're doing it without Rashawn Gary. How long can they do this without Rashawn Gary?
It was somewhat. I didn't think this was the same pass rush that they had in Miami or against the Rams. It's certainly not against – I mean, they didn't get after Kirk Cousins in the same way. I thought that the secondary, more than any point this season, especially in that first quarter when Kirk Cousins was 3 of 12 for 25 yards, a pick six, and a 4.9 passer rating, they just covered their ass off. He could not find an open receiver. It was really remarkable to watch because we haven't seen it this season. I mean, they haven't been that connected on the back end, but they're connected on the back end at this point. So the end result, Justin Jefferson had one catch for 15 yards. Mm-hmm. It's the only time in his 49-game career that he hasn't had multiple catches in a game, and it's only the second time that he's been held to fewer than 20 yards in a game. They completely removed him from the game. If you remove Justin Jefferson from the Vikings offense, they don't have much of an offense.
Their offense without Justin Jefferson runs through Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, and a lot of T.J. Hockenson now. And we saw them try to use T.J. Hockenson across the middle of the field, and he was really all they had. What were Hockenson's final numbers? Do you have them here?
7 for 59.
But they let Hockenson take that little bitty underneath stuff, but didn't let him get past the sticks very much. They talked about doing that this week with Justin Jefferson, and instead were able to do it with Hockenson just because they were able to completely eliminate Jefferson. All of that to say, is this the best defensive game plan that Joe Barry has had all season?
It was a very good game plan. We don't really know because there's been times when maybe the game plan was good and the players just didn't execute
That's
it.
Fair.
I'm going to disagree about the pass rush. I think the pass rush was a huge factor. You know, they wind up with their backup center starting and they go to their third center. He's actually a guard and he's playing center. Then Brian O'Neill gets hurt, their right tackle. And that's the guy that Kenny Clark wound up beating. I thought the interior pressure was up in Cousins' face. It wasn't, you know, they sacked him twice and they hit him six times. He got knocked down six other times. Mm-hmm. I thought they were up in his face. I thought they got their hands up and they caused how many false start penalties? Like,
oh gosh,
you know,
I lost count.
I mean, they had a ton. And,
yeah.
And I don't know if that's necessarily because of the pass rush. It might just be because they're all screwed up because they're new guys or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I thought they made a really smart move. They, instead of starting Devontae Wyatt and putting Kenny Clark in the middle, they put Slayton in the middle and they moved Jerron Reed to end and put Kenny Clark at three technique. And that really worked. You know, Reed got a lot of one-on-ones on his. Clark still gets double teamed, but Slayton was really the difference maker in the middle. He had that stop on Dalvin Cook on third and goal at the one. you know, grabbed him by his shirt.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought that was like a pretty smart move that they made to bring those three guys together. And so, yeah, it was only two sacks, but I think the six hits made a big difference.
And Kenny Clark did what Kenny Clark does against the Vikings with the strip sack and recovering the fumble. I thought this was the best they covered all season. I don't think Kirk Cousins saw a lot open. And to me, the pass rush wasn't non-existent, but I didn't feel like it tilted the field the way that I'd kind of felt the past couple weeks. This is a much, much improved secondary, really, since the second half in Miami. The last three halves that they've played have been their best three halves that they've had, really, all season. And
but I think a lot of that has to do with pass rush.
Yeah.
They got after it.
I think a
Miami.
Lot of that has to do with
Reed was had his best game against Miami, was up in the they're getting pressure up the middle. That's causing a lot of issues for quarterbacks.
I think a lot of that has to do with not having breakdowns on the back end. I think it has to do with defensive backs actually sticking to their assignments, not playing out of position the way that we've seen all season.
Why? Because the first order of business is pass rush.
I understand that. I just have a different opinion than you, Spoon.
Oh. Well, I expressed
he was like,
my.
Oh.
You expressed it.
Yeah.
I expressed
it's just
mine,
a different
and then
opinion.
You came back and said it again.
So you can say yours again.
Yes, I'm saying mine again.
I think since the second half of Miami, they've brushed up the communication. They have, you know, they had the Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle explosive plays in the first half against Miami. And since then, we have not seen the breakdowns that we saw all season. The pass rush has been good the past few weeks. I mean, that's not really new. The complimentary football, you gotta stick to your assignment on the back end. And they for the longest time, they've had a hard time doing that. If they can keep doing that like they have the past three halves, that's the part that, to me, needed to improve.
I think I see what you're saying, that the pass rush has been doing their part, and now the secondary is doing their part to complement that.
It's coming. They're not having the breakdowns that they used to have.
Okay, let's flip to the other side. You talked about the Vikings having different offensive linemen come in and guys hurt, and that really did kind of, like, cause them to struggle. It caused, procedural penalties. On the flip side of that, you saw the Packers put Zach Tom in his fourth different position today. I think he's played everything but center at this point. David Bakhtiari was able to come back after the appendectomy. At this point, do you almost want to see Zach Tom at center just to see what he can do?
Yeah, I mean, he's been really remarkable player. And for them to feel comfortable enough to take Nyman out when he was a little banged up was says something about Tom. And I think they need to evaluate the game that Nyman's been playing and evaluate what Tom's been doing and decide who's going to be the best guy for that right tackle position. I still think Nyman gives you the best pass blocking option because he's so long and tall and really athletic, but from what I could tell, Tom did a pretty good job again. I need to see it more closely, but it sure looked like he played pretty well.
And then, Ryan, I know you talked to David Bakhtiari after the game. How did he say he felt being back out there after the appendectomy?
Kind of made me wince just listening to how he was practicing. He said that it was uncomfortable in practice, that he could feel the scar tissue loosening up.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's the part that made me wince. I was, this is a guy that couldn't use the restroom a month ago, you know? He's now running into 300-pound men every single play. It's impressive. After the surgery, he said that doctors basically told him to be 3 weeks. 3 weeks, no contact. And then from there, it would be a pain management thing. And he's decided then, well, he looked at the schedule, I'll play against the Vikings. That's 4 weeks. He'll be able to practice. And I think we were all probably a little surprised that he was able to play on three practices, but he did. There was some rust. He said that, especially in the run game, he said, you know, pass pro for him has always been natural. Now, he didn't give up the sack on the 4th-and-1 But he did get walked back pretty good on that play in a way that you just don't see happen to David Bakhtiari. But the pass pro he felt was in okay shape. The run blocking angles was the biggest thing that he kind of felt some rust with. Mm-hmm. He did have a decent down block on the seal, Za'Darius Smith, on the 31-yard carry for Aaron Jones. But, yeah, I mean, it was impressive for him to be three practices in the last month, 4 weeks removed from an appendectomy, playing the full game.
That actually reminds me, I meant to say something earlier and I forgot. Keyshawn Nixon did not practice at all this week and then came in today and did what he was able to do, padded his numbers as the league's best kickoff and punt returner. He said that on Friday he didn't think he was going today, that he and the coaches had just realized, you know, he didn't practice all week, he was still hurting, he wasn't going to be able to play today, that was that. And then he spent all weekend resting. He didn't do anything. He just rested. And he woke up this morning, kind of moved around, and texted the coaches, I feel like a Ferrari. And they were like, what? And he said, I'm a Ferrari. I'm ready to go.
Sure is.
Got here today, walked around, ran around a little during pregame warm-ups, and was like, I'm good to go. Put me out there. And he said there wasn't no way they were keeping him out of this game because even though the stats have Nixon there at the league's best, do you know who's right underneath him?
Nwabe.
Nwabe, exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. And Nwabe came into this game for a long time. This season has been considered one of the league's best. And Nixon
had a good game.
Had a good game, yeah. But Nixon said after the game, quote, word on the street was they had the best returner, but I think we settled that today.
That is the most amazing part. After the groin injury, to come back and just turn
it
on.
Is it time to put him in the slot now?
He keeps asking.
Let me ask you a question. Legitimate question here. I asked Pete this too. Normally, you would say you don't want to risk offensive and defensive starters on special teams, but do you want to risk Keyshawn Nixon on defense?
Oh, well. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, Ennis Gaines has played pretty well. That's a good question. That's a really good question. I think he can handle
it. You would know this better than me. How much did Desmond Howard play on offense?
None. Hardly
anything.
He's
a return guy.
Yeah. I mean, but he wasn't any good. Keyshawn Nixon is a pretty good.
Call it how it is, Spoon.
Oh, yeah. He was terrible. But
I mean,
I'm going to post this and at him on Twitter.
Well, I mean, he was a number five.
He was here as a returner.
Draft, and yeah. They signed him for that.
Didn't he win the Heisman?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Trash.
Sealed it with a kickoff return, didn't he?
He was a Super Bowl MVP, though.
Yeah.
Anyway.
As a returner.
As a returner.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't think it's a huge risk. Like, when have you seen a corner really get hurt all that often? It doesn't happen that much. Maybe they move him to dime. I don't know. But he's such a good athlete, and he's so fast that he's an asset in the secondary, too.
I asked Alan Lazard and Robert Tonyan, like, can you beat Keyshawn Nixon in a race? And Lazard goes, only on we.
But you know what? You think about it.
It's not even so much that he's, like, straight line fast. He's shifty fast, and he has good vision.
He's fast and he can change direction.
Yes.
While not losing speed.
Kind of like Aaron Jones a little bit. On that return, that's kind of what he reminded me of, is just the way that he's able to change directions. Like you just said.
Without the de-accelerating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you asked Trim and Slot, it just hit me. You meant on offense, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think, to answer your question, Kat, I think it depends on if they need him on defense, because as dynamic of a kick returner as he is, and as much as he does tilt the field in that role, defense plays a lot more snaps. If they need him on defense, you got to play him on defense.
And I think he only had two defensive snaps today, and it makes me wonder if, like, part of that was the groin, too, and, like, wanting to just save him. Yeah. And
Here's the thing. You know, so let's say somehow they make the playoffs, and they have to go to either San Francisco. It'll probably be San Francisco, probably be Minnesota, or Minnesota, but it'll probably be San Francisco. All those balls are going out of the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
He's all of a sudden not going to be as big a factor because the weather's going to be such that you can kick the ball out of the end zone. And, you know, same with Minnesota. Joseph's going to kick that thing out of the end zone every time. They need to get that. That's the bummer for them that they don't have, if they make the playoffs, is that they don't have the home field where he gets opportunities to return kicks.
Why would you kick it to him at this point anyway? I mean, my goodness. Why would you do that to yourself?
And why did he take a touchback on that one?
Matt LaFleur said he was shocked. He said he was actually shocked that he let it go.
I think he misjudged it. I think he thought it was going to go way over his head, and it only went to about, what, the nine?
The nine, yeah. Only minus seven.
Child's
minus
play
eight.
For him.
That's for, yeah, that's like just gives him a better running start.
You know, Alan Lazard said after the game, he said, I've heard a lot of talk the past couple of weeks about what has been the difference. And he said it's offense, defense, and special teams playing together. And he said especially special teams and Keyshawn. He said when you start on the 40, that's a world of a difference for the offense. So with that being said, let's say they, you know, make it – let's say they win next week and they make it to San Francisco. From what you've seen of this offense, and keep in mind Christian Watson was a little hampered tonight – I mean, can this offense still go without Keyshawn Nixon bringing it out? That's a really roundabout way of asking how far has this offense come. And, you know, Christian Watson only had one catch tonight. He only practiced on Friday as well.
I'm curious to get Spoon's opinion on this because his Rolodex goes back way further than mine. But in my 9 years covering this team, I'm not sure I've ever seen a more I don't know the right way to say this, a lesser quarterback dependent win, and that's not a knock on Aaron Rodgers. I'm talking the passing game as a whole, as what we just saw against the Vikings. I mean, you had a return touchdown on special teams, a return touchdown on defense. You had Aaron Jones with 90 yards on 9 carries in the first half. All of that was supposed to be the blueprint for how this team could contend when the season began. It was supposed to be dominant defense, a playmaking special teams, and a run game, because they knew it was going to take time without Devontae Adams, with rookie receivers in his place, to get the passing game to a level where Christian Watson would explode. They knew it would take time. The problem with this season was that in that time it took, they didn't have a dominant defense. Their special teams wasn't making plays until week 10 when they realized, hey, we have Keyshawn Nixon on the roster. And the running game through the first half of the season was very inconsistent with how much they devoted to it. What they just did, I've never seen a Packers win where the passing game was less important than this game. Aaron Rodgers didn't ball out. Christian Watson had his first catch in the third quarter, and the Packers had 27 points at that point. I don't know how far back you'd have to go, Spoon, but that to me in 9 years, that's the least it's been.
Yeah, it's – I mean, this is a completely different offense than what – if you had said Packers scored 41 points, you go, oh, well, Rodgers threw for 325 with four touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he threw for 159 and one touchdown.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just did not looked at that part of the box score yet. He threw for less than 200 yards.
Yeah. And
wow.
And okay, I'm not going to, you know, everyone thinks I hate him and whatever, but I could have thrown that touchdown to Tanya. I mean, he was wide open.
At least he saw him.
Seeing him. Yes.
He had to back up. He had to take he backpedaled to
but
get out of that pressure.
It was sort of like it happened because he should have thrown it to him in the first place. Yeah. But then Tanya's like, well, screw it. I'm just going to go run to the corner. And it wound up being a good decision not to throw it to him in the first time. But, you know.
Tanya called that a scramble drill.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had a couple of first down tosses to Lazard that were big.
Mm-hmm.
And Cobb. But think about some of those first downs, too. He turns that one to Cobb. He's 6 yards short of the first down. He turns around and bowls his way to a first down. Someone else did that, too.
Lazard was like 2 yards short. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Watson, you're right.
Yeah. And so.
Slipped a tackle, yeah.
You know, this is not even your older brother's sister's Packers. This is a different kind of animal. And I don't know how far you can go in the NFL without offense. It's going to be interesting.
I think they're still figuring out how to balance Aaron Jones and Christian Watson together. you know, in the way that they were able to do the past few years with Davante Adams and Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
They were able to do that. They've done that, but I don't think they've quite figured that out. And if they do, it really unlocks some things for this offense.
And they didn't get much help from Christian Watson tonight.
No, and he wasn't 100%.
He wasn't.
You could tell. No. He wasn't.
Yeah.
He was a decoy a lot of the time.
He was.
They went deep three times with him. They really wanted to hit that play, didn't they?
Yeah,
goodness.
I talked to him after the game, and I asked him, like, did you feel like you were 100% tonight? You know, they tried to hit that deep shot to you a few times. Was it just not there tonight? Was that you? And he was like, I feel like it was there, and I should have made the play. Of course, the guy's going to say that. But he said the play he really should have made was the one deep down the left sideline. It wasn't the one in the end zone, but it was – near, I think it would have been in the second quarter because of which way they were going.
Yes, he was going into the end zone, right? It was right in
not the one in the end zone. It was around the 20-ish. It would have been in the first quarter, second and 10 from the 36.
Yeah, that's the one where he kind of got held.
Yeah.
Deep left to Christian Watson, incomplete.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Rodgers, if he's, you know, unabated, mm-hmm. then they hit that because Rodgers threw it way out for him. But the corner got his hands on him, did a good job getting his hands on
and
him, got away with it.
That's the space that Christian Watson's been getting. He's been getting off of that, mm-hmm. especially off the line and just using his speed. Do you think that was partly like just his injury was maybe keeping him a step slower so the corner had the chance to do that?
I think so. Like, maybe he could have caught up with that ball. I don't know. Mm-hmm. He just didn't look – like, after he caught that 11-yard pass, too, he looked like he had a little hitch.
Mm-hmm.
And watching him in warm-ups, I thought he was just not quite the same.
I mean, as close of a call as it was for him to play, and you get the feeling, like, if this wasn't Week 17, win or go home – if this is week four, he's probably not playing tonight. It's probably not happening. It was a really close call. Didn't practice all week. It stands logic that he was definitely not 100%. The hip affected him. I don't think there was a re-aggravation, which is a good thing. I mean, I think he got out of it okay. But, yeah, I mean, he certainly was less than full capacity.
You got to play through that stuff at this time of the year. You mm-hmm. know, especially like if you get in the playoffs, you got to play with that. And his presence on the field, even if he's not catching balls, is important.
I mean, he pulled the defense deep downfield so much, and it opened up that stuff for Cobb and for Lazard and some of that.
Well, in the run game, because they kept their safeties back almost the entire game. I mean, that's kind of their defense as it is. But, you know, Aaron Jones starts pounding you, you got to bring someone up and stop them, and they never did.
Did Aaron Jones look 100% to you? You know, he's been quote-unquote managed the past two or three weeks.
Looked pretty good to me.
There was no managing tonight. He touched the ball in the first five or six plays, or touched or was targeted on the first five or six mm-hmm. plays, and ended up with 14 carries, only five of them after halftime, but that's because they had a blowout lead. I had a feeling like he could have gone for 20 carries if they needed him to tonight.
Mm-hmm. If anyone looked kind of slow, it was Dylan. I thought mm-hmm. he just looked kind of sluggish today.
And yet, six touchdowns now in the last 5 games.
Games.
He's getting to the end zone.
Well, he can finish it. Yeah.
He sure can. Yeah. Which makes
he got a
you
lot
know,
of push, too. That touchdown was a pile push.
That third and one, fourth and one series in the first half when they pitched to A.J. Dillon on the
that
left side.
Weird,
and then they throw it on fourth. Like, run the ball up the gut. I mean, we're picking. This is small potatoes here in a game that's 41-3 at one point. But that was a bit surprising.
41-3 is actually how I'm going to think of it because mm-hmm. that's what the score was when they pulled their defensive starters
mm-hmm.
with over 9 minutes still left to play in the game against a dynamic offense.
I don't know about you guys, but the question that I had in my mind after this game is how much of this is the Vikings and how much of this is the Packers? Because if – you know, the Vikings are, we all know, they're not as good as your run-of-the-mill 12-win team. I mean, they're plus-minus on the year now is minus 19. They've won a lot of close games. Give them credit for that because that's the bottom line. But they sure have not been dominant. The Packers are better than I think they've been at any point this season. I mean, this is the best that they played. But are they? I mean, you still see a lot of things that make you wonder how good they are. And so that's it's hard to decipher because if, you know, I talked about they have the formula. If they can stick to it, which is a huge leap of faith because it's been erratic sticking to it all season. But if they can, it's a terrible NFC. It's a bad conference. Like Aaron Rodgers has said, I think he's right. They can beat anyone and they can lose to anyone. You just don't know what to expect from this team. They stick to the formula. They're playing their best ball. They get into the playoffs. Maybe they can do something with it. But they can also lose to the Lions next week.
Mm-hmm. That being said, that's a good transition to sort of start landing this thing. We're going to be dropping the landing gear down now. Put your tray tables up. As I said at the beginning, at some point the Vikings have to go, you know what, we've got our spot locked up. We're down pretty big. Let's just, you know, be safe.
Stop losing starters.
Yes. The Lions are going to be coming in here with a very, very different mindset. Mm-hmm. The Lions will not be at home, which is the Lions have played much better at home this year than they have on the road. But all of that being said, with what you know of the Lions, who beat the Chicago Bears 41-10 today, and what you saw from the Packers, is that a winnable game next week for the Packers?
Oh, absolutely.
Most definitely winnable.
Absolutely, it's winnable. It's going to be a different game, though. Mm-hmm. Detroit's offense is fantastic, and their offensive line is really good. That's going to be the difference. Mm-hmm. The Packers are going to have to figure out how to try to pressure Jared Goff. Now, their defense is god-awful. So if they can get Aaron Jones going and hold the ball and keep Detroit's defense, you know, on the field, mm-hmm. then they got a really good chance to win.
Go ahead, Ryan, with what you were going to say.
I completely agree with Spoon. I don't know if I have anything else to say, Spoon.
Well, yeah.
I'm completely with you on this.
I needed you to talk so that I have a chance to look this
well,
up.
Well, okay. Well, you know, usually that's not a problem for me, so I'm sorry to throw you the curveball.
I was looking to see because I think
Aiden Hutchinson
had another game-changing play today.
You know, what they got? Like two wins now at Lambeau Field since 1993? I know they broke that long drought.
Yeah, maybe three now, but
you know,
they've played a couple of good games here.
It's not what it used to be, but like, can you imagine if they lose to the Lions at Lambeau Field with the playoffs on the line? Yeah. It's like one of the most catastrophic things that have ever happened to the Green Bay Packers, just from a psychological standpoint. Like that's just, you don't lose to the Lions at Lambeau Field, period. You especially don't do it in a one game play in.
Yeah, you can't, especially if you just after you just beat the Vikings by, you know, 24 points.
I just don't see the Packers losing at this point. They can. They absolutely can. And the thing with this team in this season is just when you think they're going to do one thing, they do the exact opposite thing. So that's just the way it's been.
Yeah.
But I don't see them losing.
They have to come out like they did today, with their hair on fire. Mm-hmm. But that's hard when the Detroit Lions come to town, you know. Historically, it's just like,
Dan Campbell's going to have their hair on fire,
yes,
too.
They are.
Yeah,
because yes,
one of the
are.
Things that I think helped the Packers have their hair on fire was week one, mm-hmm. was all the crap they heard about Justin Jefferson this, Justin Jefferson that. Joe Barry, do you even know, you know, your cornerback from your safety when it comes to coverage? They were tired of hearing that. And it's going to be a little more difficult to manufacture that type of chip against the Detroit Lions.
I don't know. If I'm Matt LaFleur, I'm just walking around the locker room all week and writing 15-9 on everything.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the score?
Yeah, but the Lions just don't – they don't instill the –
hatred.
You
don't hate the
I
Lions.
I really
don't.
There was going to be a fight today.
Yeah,
oh,
from
the very
first kickoff.
Play, yeah.
The Vikings are different.
And Za'Darius Smith wouldn't shake hands with anybody.
I thought they hugged. I mean, we're seven stories up. I thought they hugged. I didn't realize until after the game that they, like, it was that.
But he didn't shake hands. He ran to the locker room as soon as the game was over.
Really?
Didn't speak to anyone.
Mm-hmm. It's just the Lions, like, look, I relate most things in life to the New York Mets and my fandom. All right, the Lions are the Washington Nationals. Washington Nationals, they won a World Series a couple years ago. I'm a huge Mets fan. I don't hate the Washington Nationals. I hate the Braves. I hate the Phillies. I don't hate the Washington Nationals. You're a Packers fan. You're a player immersed in this rivalry. There's some bad blood there with the Bears. There's some bad blood with the Vikings. You don't hate the Detroit Lions, but they're going to have to come out that way because the situation calls for it. This is not your old Detroit Lions. This is a team standing in your way of a playoffs that are trying to get to the playoffs themselves. There is going to be a whole lot more intensity that you just usually don't get when it's Packers Lions.
You're the only person in a 100-mile radius who understood that metaphor.
Yeah, you're welcome. I understood it completely.
Last thing before we start to wrap up. Spoon, real quick, I know you spoke to Mason Crosby after the game. What was the deal with the kickers?
So Ramiz Ahmed was going to kick off. And on one of his warm-ups, he pulled a groin muscle. Ooh. And pretty bad. And so he goes in, and Crosby hadn't even practiced kickoffs, you know. Ahmed had done it all. So Crosby's like, oh, well, I haven't really warmed up, but okay, I'll go out there. And then he hits that line drive knuckleball to start the game. Now, if they thought they needed Ramiz Ahmed in a must-win game to do kickoffs, then they're down on Mason Crosby's kickoffs. Mm-hmm. And now they're going to probably have to live with it because I don't know if Ahmed's going to be able to play.
Can you get a kickoff specialist off the street, though?
I don't know.
I don't know how hard that is. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Can you put him on the 53, too? I guess you could put him on the practice squad, and then he'd have three call-ups. I don't know how that works in the playoffs.
It starts over for the playoffs. It's three call-ups in the regular season.
You know what's interesting is I thought that squib was intentional for the first one because they're kicking away from, you don't want to kick it deep to this return guy that they got. And it's a really bad time to lose the guy that you're supposed to have a kickoff specialist against that returner.
Yeah, and they averaged 38 yards of kickoff return, something like that.
He had a good night. Yeah. He did. It just paled in comparison to Keyshawn Nixon's.
They didn't house one.
Yeah. That being said, Tariq Carpenter's still a little menace on return coverage, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. He's a tough dude.
Yeah, he is. Let's go ahead and just go ahead put our cart before our horse.
I'm not making a prediction.
Okay, never mind.
It's too early in the week. Jeez. I haven't even seen the injury report yet.
I'll tell you. Barring the injury report, because you never know. I don't think the Packers are going to lose at this point. And that's coming from me, who after the last time they played Detroit said this season is over. So take that for what you're worth, because I have no idea what the hell is going to happen in this season. It is way past the point of being any kind of logical whatsoever. But I just don't think they're going to lose at this point. I think they're going to the playoffs. This is insane.
The second Mason Crosby's 56-yard field goal bounced off the bar and then back through the uprights, I was like, yep, they're like, this is their year right now to at least make it to the playoffs. I don't know if they'll beat San Francisco. That's their Achilles heel. But
there was a moment there where it looked like the Raiders were going to beat the 49ers, which would have precluded a wild card trip to San Francisco in all likelihood. Like, that's how
Davante Adams was doing everything he could to keep us from
going. He was defying physics.
It's just crazy.
I was thinking about this on the way down about how do you know when a team has something special, like, and they have it going for you. It happens in the playoffs. You know, I was thinking back to 2010. And the Packers were, you know, they finished really pretty strong. But everyone thought they were going to lose in Philadelphia. And then they went in and beat the Eagles. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, well, maybe they got something going here. And then they go into Atlanta and Tremont Williams picks off a pick six right before halftime. And then you're like, okay, now there's something. So I don't think you get that feeling until you get to the playoffs, you know? And so we'll find out whether they really have something going here. I mean, they did. It was great that they beat the Vikings, you know, that they showed guts and whatever. They got to do it to the Lions. But then it's playoff time, and that's when you really find out what they're made of.
Yeah. Whatever happens, we'll be there to cover it for you all. We still have so much coverage coming for you to wrap up this game on PackersNews.com with many more stories. And then we will continue to have coverage for you throughout this week as the Packers get ready to welcome the Lions, and at some point we'll get a prediction out of Spoon for that game as well. Guys, thanks so much as always. Thank you for joining us. This has been the Green 19 podcast from JSONline and PackersNews.com.